I wanted a perfect ending, but now I've learned the hard way that some poems don't rhyme, some stories don't have a clear beginning, middle, and end. Life is about not knowing, having to change, taking the moment and making the best of it without knowing what's going to happen next. And this week's opening quote comes from Dr. Eben Alexander. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Have you ever really sat down and asked yourself what it is we do with this movement that we have on the internet? You know, what this quest that we are on is all about. You know, when I first began this journey and began speaking out online, I mean, I've been researching for many years besides then. I've been talking to many people and having many conversations about all this stuff in my entire life. But when I first began speaking out online, it was because I could see so clearly what was coming. I'd been able to see it for many years. And the motivation for me was freedom and resistance to tyranny. I mean, there were other motivating factors as well, such as the fact that I could see so many people spreading fear and not too many people addressing the opportunities that the knowledge of this tyranny brings to people, you know, the knowledge of what our surroundings really are brings to people, you know, the way this information can be used and channeled into some form of positive response rather than just convincing people to cower in fear and wait for the police state to come, because I could see a lot of that going on, and I felt there was a need for some balance. But the real goal was freedom and stimulating some type of response to what I could see coming. They were my motivating forces, and they are the two things that have kept my focus. They're the two things that have kept me motivated on this quest that we do. But again, what is it that we do? Because it began as resistance, a need to respond. Well, that was my motivation. And really, when you look at most of the people who have influenced the so-called truth movement, which is kind of what it's become, and I'll have a look at that label in a little minute as well. But what really began it, if you look at some of the people who got it started, people like Bill Cooper and many of the people who've been speaking out for the last 20 or 30 years, what really got it all started and what motivated these people was the same thing. It was freedom. It was freedom and response to tyranny. Now, of course, in order to do anything such as establish a meaningful resistance and in order to establish freedom, in order to really know what's going on, of course, the first thing you need is information. Knowledge of how the system works, who's involved, and what it really is, and what's going on behind the scenes. And there are a lot of people that dug very deeply and found all sorts of information that was brought to people, which exposed the system for what it is. People found out about central banking. They found out about how the economic system really functions, how it's really a system of debt slavery designed to keep people in servitude. And then it became a little deeper. People found out about secret societies, how the birth certificate works, how the Sesta KV trusts were set up by the Vatican. And it became, at that point, quite exciting for people. Became almost like a spy novel, became like this deep, dark, secret world that you could go into to get information from. The secret world that the other people, the regular people, didn't know about. Almost like reading a Harry Potter novel. And suddenly all of this secret information, all this occulted information, all the stuff that had been hidden from us, suddenly was given a label and was called truth. This is the truth. And now the resistance has suddenly become the truth movement, whereas now, rather than attempting to establish a meaningful resistance, it's all about finding the secret information. And as soon as that mindset was in people's minds, suddenly there was all this information there for us to find. All these secret documents, all these secret leaked reports, all of these things going on to confirm almost any suspicion we had about any rabbit hole we were going down. And in this environment, almost anything that is found which is saying something contrary to what the mainstream narrative is labeled the truth. And so we have all sorts of different rabbit holes for people to go down, and it's all turned into this gathering of secreted and occulted information, irrespective of how truthful it may actually be, because a lot of it simply comes from online sources, and we don't know how accurate any of it really is. And don't get me wrong, look, a lot of it is good information. There's a lot of good stuff out there, but rather than it being put on the table for open discussion and all put together as one thing so it can be examined all together and analyzed and see how it all correlates with each other, it's often viewed as being someone's intellectual property, and people want to exalt themselves as being a guru of this particular type of information. And as a result, the information is compartmentalized. It's labeled as this truth and that truth, and anybody who disagrees with any part of either one of it is the enemy. Must be an infiltrator, must be this, must be that. There's no real open discussion. Everything is labeled the truth simply because it is something that is contrary to what is presented by government or academia. It's a very counterproductive way of thinking. And people who do find information and do have their little rabbit hole that they're going down suddenly become an expert in whatever field it is that they're looking at, and we've seen this whole social hierarchy develop amongst the so-called truth movement as well, where it is these people who hold a specific truth or these people who lead the examination into this particular field suddenly become exalted to celebrity status. And unfortunately, many people tend to believe their own press. And so ego has got in the way. And so the focus has been shifted. The attention has been shifted away from exposing the mechanism of that which enslaves us and finding a meaningful resistance and response to that mechanism. And it's all become, for many, about the gathering of information. And the presenting of this information, essentially the presenting of different theories of what may be, what may have happened, and what may be going on, rather than keeping the focus on formulating some type of meaningful resistance to what is coming, and at least keeping focus on what is coming and dealing with it. And again, how do we deal with it? Well, we deal with it by not complying with our own slavery, ladies and gentlemen. Stop using the smart devices, stop using everything that is leading towards this smart system, this whole IoT and the social crediting system that is going along with it. But of course, we also need to do it by sharing information with people, and we come back to that same question of which information? What do we know is true? Which rabbit hole do we want to go down? And the question is, do you really need to go down a rabbit hole at all? Because in order to bring about some real change in the world, you need to find information that the average man on the street is going to be able to identify with. The average man and woman can see this and say, ah, yes, that makes sense. You start telling them all about secret societies and all sorts of stuff, even some of the stuff that I brought you recently about the fact that history has been changed and fabricated. I bring you this information because it's interesting stuff for those who are awake to discover and to find out and to look at. But when you're talking to the people next door who think that it's a good idea to collect shopping stamps at the supermarket and that voting actually means something, they're not really interested in hearing about secret societies and all sorts of esoteric information that we've uncovered. They're not interested in hearing about the fact that history may be fabricated. What they're interested in is that which is going to affect their hip pocket, that which is going to affect the food on their table, and how easy or difficult it is for them to get through life. You've got to understand that most of the people that we're dealing with, the vast majority of people in the world, are suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, where they actually view those who rule them as being celebrities, those who rule them as being people of great moral standing, people they swoon over when they see them in public, simply because they're people they've seen on the television. This is the kind of effect that television has had on people. And of course, by creating movies and things like the Avengers and all these great wonderful people up there doing all these larger than life things, and then putting politicians next to these people in public, you suddenly view the politicians as being celebrities as well, and they all seem larger than life, and everyone gets Stockholm Syndrome. So you've got to find the right information to bring to the people on the street that's going to be cracking the shell for them in a manner that cracks it effectively, in a manner that they can identify with, something that they can understand because it's something that affects them. And then I'll find out the rest of the information later, if they choose to look. But ultimately, we don't even need many of them to really look and know. What we need is to establish freedom, because once we do establish freedom, what's really going on will simply unfold as a matter of course. So we need to bring information to people that they can identify with. And one of the most helpful things you can do is wake people up to the fact that they're living in a system of contrived debt slavery. But the cost of living doesn't really need to keep going up the way it does. It's all contrived, and it's actually pretty simple to point this out to people in a way they can understand it. Yeah, it's always a good place to start. And really, folks, what you've got to do is look at the system. Look at what the system is and how it works. This is what I attempted to bring to people on the radio show last week, which was titled A Truth That Most Refuse to See, that when I posted to YouTube, the show actually got censored due to user complaints before the show even went live. I actually recorded the radio show and uploaded the video clip to YouTube a couple of hours before the show went to air. And when I went to make the video clip live, it had already been censored by YouTube due to user reports of the content of the video, apparently. But as I said, this happened before the video was even live and could be viewed by anybody. But what I was mainly talking about in that video was the banking system and how the banking system works, how central banking is the key to the whole thing. Central bankers are who controls all of our governments. Central banking is what creates the system of debt slavery that we live in, simply because of the way the central banks are run, because of the interest attached to the money that is in circulation. Because when a government takes out a loan from a central bank to run a country, they have to pay that loan back at interest, but the interest is never created. The principal is created, but the interest that they need to pay back is never created. The only way they can ever get that money in circulation to gather the interest in order to pay the loan back is to borrow more paper from the central bank. But, of course, when they do that, that has interest attached to it as well. So it's this never-ending cycle. And the only possible result of this cycle is that poverty is created artificially. The lower rungs of society get discarded as the cost of living gradually climbs, and eventually all of society gets discarded. The only ones who are left are the ones who print and control the money. That's the way it works, and that is the only possible conclusion to come out of this usurious monetary system. And many people don't see it because they're so distracted and they're so trained and programmed to judge each other according to their economic value, which is why society is in the state that it's in. It's a situation that creates scarcity, it creates wars, it creates competition with people whereby you have social hierarchy and all of the sort of stuff that goes along with it. It's key to understanding how the system works. This usurious monetary system is literally the glue that holds the whole system together. And that's what I covered on that radio show. So this is important information to bring to people. The fact that people are living in a state of scarcity and servitude and they're paying taxes in order to pay off interest on the government's loan to a private bank. That's what's going on. You know, and there's no reason for us to be doing this. There's no reason for us to be borrowing money from a private bank in order to run our countries. We don't need to have a monetary system like this at all because the world's just run by people. How come you've got this one group of people who sit above all governments and dictate what the actions of these governments do by controlling the flow of money that all of these governments have and that all the currency that all these countries use? And if the governments don't toe the line, then the banks simply don't give them the loan. They devalue their currency. They end up having their country marginalized and the government will get thrown out. That's how you create revolutions in countries. You simply deprive the population by marginalizing the country and eventually the people get annoyed and they overthrow the government. This is what they're trying to do with Iran by the sanctions that the United States puts on Iran. You know, depriving food and medicines and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't hurt the government, it hurts the people. And the intention is to make things so hard for the people and to have so many people dying of starvation and all this bad stuff happening that they will rise up and overthrow the government for you. That's what these governments attempt to do when they put sanctions on other countries. They squeeze the population in the hope that their population will squeeze their government for not doing what the United States or whoever is sanctioning them is telling them to do. And if there is some sort of situation where the people do get sick of it and they rise up against their government, then the media will portray it as a populist revolution and the United States will send forces in there to help the freedom fighters. That's the way it works. And you've really got to look at this, folks, and look at the utter inhumanity of sanctions and have a look at Donald Trump. And whatever you think about Donald Trump, the fact that he has just reinstated sanctions against Iran demonstrates the true character of the man. Because when you're putting sanctions on a country, what you are essentially doing is killing the population without actually declaring war on them. You know, sanctions will do one thing in Iran. It will kill Iranian children first. That's the first thing it will do, and it will deprive Iranian households, normal people living in Iran, of the basic essentials and medicines that they need, food, water, clothing, things that they need to live a normal life. Nothing at all that hurts the government. What it does is it deprives the population and puts them in a state of scarcity, and essentially it kills children. So Donald Trump, by reinstating sanctions on Iran, has made the conscious choice to kill Iranian children for his own political reasons. That is what he has done. He has decided to enact an operation which the first thing it will do is kill children in order to put pressure on a foreign government. And that is not the act of a normal human mind. It is not the act of a compassionate, caring man. The sanctions they put on Saddam Hussein when they sanctioned Iraq killed 500,000 Iraqi children. And Madeleine Albright said she thought it was worth it, even though the sanctions achieved nothing. And the same will happen with Iran. The sanctions will achieve nothing. It will not achieve any capitulation by Iran towards the United States. All it will do is kill Iranian children. It will do other things, but as I said, that is the first thing it will do, is kill the children. And then when you look at the bigger picture and put this on a world stage, and you look at the rest of Trump's actions, the way he's been flexing his muscles against China, tariffs, all of this sort of stuff, the way he's been isolating America from the rest of the world as much as he can, and of course he's been getting away with all of this under the guise of the Make America Great Again slogan, but when you really look at his actions and take into account that he's been carrying out this process while this whole Chinese One Belt One Road system is coming online, this again serves to isolate the United States from the rest of the world, because in the face of Trump reinstating these sanctions, a vote was cast in the UN just the other day condemning the sanctions, saying they are inhuman and they should be overturned immediately, and actually passing a resolution the United States should do this. Trump will naturally ignore this resolution, which will give a lot of countries the excuse they need to pull further away from the United States, and they'll all be able to do so pretty much with the support of their populations as well, because the populations aren't going to like this. They're going to view the United States as being rather inhuman for wanting to do this, and you can tell, folks, because otherwise it wouldn't be receiving the amount of publicity that it has. All of these things are political maneuvers, ladies and gentlemen, and all of them are designed to provide excuses to other nations and to provide the excuse needed to isolate the United States more and more. And again, if you're going to bring down the United States from within, if you're going to manage the controlled demolition of the United States, it's got to be done in such a way that it seems like a normal course of events that simply wasn't the United States' fault that it happened. Well, that's the way it needs to be presented to the people of the United States, anyway. And again, all of this is a precursor to China's One Belt, One Road trade system coming online and taking over the European trade sector, which may result in the removal of the United States dollar as the global reserve currency, which will basically see the end of the United States as an economic power. It may still have a lot of military might, but it's not going to be able to do a lot with it if it doesn't have the money to support it. And of course, when that happens, you'll see major economic change in the entire Western world, which is, of course, one of the reasons they are locking the Western world down to the extent in which they are. The new laws that have come in Australia, the surveillance laws, the way they can now confiscate your digital personality when you enter into the country, they can basically confiscate your mobile phone and your laptop, and they can go and search it all. And if you refuse to give them the passwords to get into your devices, you can be fined up to $5,000 and suffer 3 months in jail. The same thing is now happening in New Zealand as well. You may be subject to digital strip search when entering the country. And this is, of course, all part of the Five Eyes surveillance program. Now, you notice that this can't happen in the United States. It can't happen in England. It can't happen in Canada. But all of these countries can request that Australia or New Zealand target specific passengers when they arrive from Europe, from America, from anywhere, and then Australia will pass that information on to the United States or England or the EU or anybody who wants it, as part of the Five Eyes Treaty. So this way these countries get to surveil their own citizens when they travel through Australia or New Zealand. And this is very interesting as well because it actually contravenes the laws in Europe. So how would the situation be if you're a person who has a business in Europe, a business based in the EU, and you come to Australia and you are told that you must open up your private details to the Australian Customs Department or suffer arrest? And yet if you run a business in the EU and you comply with the wishes of Australian Customs and you give them the passwords and allow them access to your devices, you are now in breach of the EU's business privacy laws. So what happens in this situation? Because the parameters surrounding these laws are so vague, so by basically complying with these laws, you're putting yourself in a position where you're basically being given the option to not comply with Australian Customs and be arrested here at the Australian airport, or to comply with Australian Customs and to be arrested when you get back to the EU for breaking EU privacy laws by complying with Australian Customs. So how does this work? You basically get the option of being either arrested here in Australia or arrested when you get back to the EU simply because you entered the country. And sure, that may be a little bit of an extreme scenario, but basically that's the opportunity that these laws provide should some type of corrupt government wish to view it that way. And if the government wishes to view it that way, well, who's to stop them? Because governments just generally do what they want to do. So can anyone see a problem with this situation? I mean, it certainly does create a nice little loophole for these people should they wish to use it. And the thing is that even if they don't do that, even if that is, as I said, a worst-case scenario and it's preposterous and they don't ever do anything like that, well, what happens if you've got a business anyway? Because under the privacy laws of any country, if your data has been compromised, it's up to you to inform all of your customers and all your clients that your data has been compromised. So if you do have a business and you enter Australia or New Zealand and customs seizes your devices and looks at them, then you have an obligation to inform all of your clients that their data may now possibly have been compromised by a third party that you are not in control of, and you have no idea of knowing what software has been installed on your device and what transactions you perform may now be being spied on and recorded. So you actually have a duty of care to inform all of your customers and clients that their data has now been compromised. So what does this do to anybody who's running a business anyway? I mean, this type of legislation could effectively destroy any business of any person who enters the country, because it will compromise the business's data and therefore naturally do a good deal of damage to any reputation the business may have built. I guess the only real option to ensure that your business is kept safe is for you to never enter Australia or New Zealand with any digital devices. And again, they're doing all of this to protect us from terrorism, or so they tell us. And yet I guarantee you, when you enter a country and you get told that you're going to be fined $5,000 or suffer 3 months in jail if you don't comply, and yet by complying, you know in the back of your mind you may be possibly facing the threat of arrest when you get home for doing so, well, that, my friends, is terrorism in itself. You know, and I call it terrorism, folks, because ultimately, anything that you're forced to comply with under threat of violence or under threat of intimidation, under threat of punishment, this is terrorism. It's actually the Oxford English definition of terrorism: violence or the threat of violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion, often for political reasons. And this is exactly what the customs officers are now doing to people who enter the country in Australia and New Zealand. They're using terrorism against them under the pretext of doing so to protect them against terrorism. That's a neat trick, isn't it? But of course, this is what they've been doing all along, right since the beginning, right since the invention of government and the invention of police forces. It's just that nobody's really noticed it before because it hasn't been quite done to the extent that they're doing it now. Now it's really getting in everybody's face. A couple subject to violent assault from police in Manchester the other day for buying too much water at a Tesco. I mean, whether they provoked the confrontation or not because they complained a little bit at the shop counter, irrespective of that, nothing they did justified the violent response they received from the police, who could have simply escorted them from the store if they felt they were actually making a problem. But whatever the outcome, there was certainly no reason for the police to have assaulted the couple the way they proceeded to do. But this is simply the way things are going. And of course, they need to do this because they need to desensitize people. They need to condition society to view police violence as being okay, because as more and more people get discarded by the economic model, the more police violence we're going to see. This is, of course, why they've made homelessness illegal as well. Imagine living in a country where it's illegal to be homeless. Now, you're caught up in an economic model which is designed to discard society as the price of living climbs. And it's illegal to be poor, illegal to have no money, to be in a position where you're absolutely destitute and you desperately need help. It's illegal to be in that situation if you live in the UK. How does that work, ladies and gentlemen? What sort of society have we become? What has human consciousness degraded into, where this is even seen as being acceptable on any level, in any society, let alone in a society as pompous as England, a society as rich as England, a country as rich as England? People may say, oh no, we're not rich in England, we've got a gross national debt and all sorts of rah, rah, rah. All this is contrived, folks. You look at the British royal family and what they own. England is an incredibly rich country. You may not be rich because you are subject to the economic model that that royal family chooses to enslave you to, but that does not mean that the actual country of England is not rich. Well, those who control the country are not rich anyway, because they are. The Queen of England and the British royal family are far more in control of things than a lot of people give them credit for. They really do have a very, very well-established stake in what's going on this earth, ladies and gentlemen. They may seem like they're just figureheads, but they really do have a very, very big stake in everything. That's why you never really hear much about them. That's why you're always pointing the finger at the Rothschilds and pointing the finger at Soros and pointing the finger at all these people that you think are the ones that are doing things, but really, the royals, the royal family, even Queen Beatrice or Queen Beatrice's family, Queen Beatrice is gone now, but the Dutch royal family, the British royal family, all of these royal families across Europe play a very, very major role in what is going on, which again is, of course, why you never hear from them. How many people hear what the Bulgarian royal family is up to? Interesting stuff, folks. But I better leave it there for now, because I think we have reached break time, so we'll go and have a break, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Don't go away, and thanks for listening. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. So I have been wanting to bring you more information on ancient history and on where my research has been leading, and bring you more information on the Magyar language and some of the stuff that I've brought you recently in regard to ancient history. But again, it's a matter of priorities and a matter of paying attention to what's going on around us. Because as much as I want to be looking at all this stuff, there are certain things that need to be dealt with. And that's what I've been attempting to convey to you on the last few shows. And this is what it's been limiting my work that I've been trying to get done on the films as well. It's just the fact that we are currently in a state of clear and present danger, and this danger is escalating exponentially. And there is a certain amount of urgency involved in dealing with this situation. There really is. So I guess with everything that I've been presenting to you on the show today, the real goal, I suppose, what I'm trying to say is to always remember to keep a focus on the bigger picture. Though it's good to look down rabbit holes, it's good to research information. Be careful what you choose to believe, and don't lose focus on your surroundings and on the bigger picture and what all the plays are about. Now, as I've said so many times, all the world is a stage and all of these governments work together. And all you've got to do is look at the Five Eyes to see how this works. Look at the Chinese One Belt, One Road system, how this is all coming in place. Look at what Trump's actions are. Look at how all the dominoes are being put in place and how they're going to fall. Because once things get put in place, they fall in a certain way. That's the way it goes. As I said about the monetary system earlier, when you consider the fact that money has interest attached to it, has usury attached to it. And because of this usury, the debt can never, ever be paid off. So it is this accumulating debt that just keeps growing and growing. So it discards the lower rungs of society and eventually transfers all wealth into the hands of those who control the money system. And again, folks, you see, it's just putting the dominoes in place, the dominoes at this point being the monetary system and allowing them to fall where they will. You see how this works, and you see it's a natural progression. It can't go any other place. So the question is, why do we comply with this? We know it's a system designed to discard humanity and exalt those who issue the currency. So why do we put up with it? You know, we put up with it because the government says, well, it's the law, you have to do it this way. But we've forgotten what our place in society is and what government's place in society is. We've forgotten that what we're dealing with is just people. Now, this is why I've put so much emphasis on the shows on discovering your own personal power and standing in your own personal power and the power of doing that, what that could actually achieve. You know, if all of society suddenly realized their own self-worth and didn't view politicians as celebrities, if they could shake off this Stockholm syndrome that they're suffering, whereby they love their oppressors, if they could just see these people as just being people, the same as them, having no more or less value than anybody else, then we could find a way out of this mess. We really could. We don't have to comply with any of this, folks. That's the only reason the system is in place, is we comply with our own slavery. And that's what's wrong with the whole QAnon thing and all of this stuff that's coming in the future that people think is going to happen, this grand plan to save the world. It's not dealing with the monetary system. It's not dealing with this system of economic slavery. It's not dealing with the fact of who controls the money. It's not dealing with the fact that the whole banking system is run by a supremacist cartel that views most of the human species as animals. And that's just the fact of the matter, folks, because that's what it is. As I said last week, it's a Jewish usurious monetary system we're subject to. And if you look at the Talmud, you look at the Jewish mindset, they view the rest of the world as animals. And they feel perfectly justified in everything that they do to the goyim. So until we shake ourselves out of this system and realize that nothing Trump's doing, nothing anybody's doing, no plan anybody has put forth so far has been taking into account this monetary system, at least no plan that we're seeing from any political quarter anyway. There's no politician on earth that is talking about the monetary system and talking about how to actually free humanity or taking any steps whatsoever to achieve any emancipation from this system at all. Not Trump, not anybody. You know, all the stuff Trump's doing, this whole Make America Great Again policy and all these isolationist policies he's adopting, none of this is addressing anything real, ladies and gentlemen, none of it. Now, if you look at the New World Order and what it is, and you look at it in the context of the IoT and the smart grid and social crediting and China's One Belt, One Road system, you can see it's just all part of putting the dominoes in place so that the world can be set up to run in a certain direction. And that's exactly what's happening. All the world is a stage. All the governments work together, and it's all part of the same play. So people really do need to get some focus on this and look at the bigger picture and see what's really going on here. And as I said, pay attention to this 5G control grid, this Internet of Things, and this digital surveillance and social crediting system that is coming online with it. And like I said, folks, if you think it isn't happening in your country, we'll just look at this Five Eyes Agreement and the new surveillance laws that are coming into place in Australia and how these laws are also being adopted to be used in other countries via Australia, simply through the Five Eyes Treaty. Look at that, and then as I mentioned last week, pay attention to the fact that if you have an Apple device, then Apple is now giving your device a trust score depending on what you browse for and what you do, and so you can see that this social crediting is coming to the West. It's just starting with the devices rather than people. But of course it is people who control the devices, so applying it to people will be a natural progression. They just realize they need to start with baby steps. But it's good that they are doing it with baby steps, really, in a way, because it does still provide us with an opportunity to get involved. And we can make a difference if we choose to get involved. And people are making a difference, folks. There's actually some people here in Australia that opened up a website called Environment and Community Safe from Radiation. It's an Australian website, and you can find that at ecsfr.com.au. And they have actually taken action against the rollout of 5G in their local community, and they have had success. Using the method that has been outlined by the InPower movement and adapting it to Australia, they've had success, folks, and they're now taking on more action as well and encouraging more communities to get involved. So if you're in an Australian community and you would like to know how to combat 5G and the rollout of this system in your area, I do urge you to go to that website. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll put a link in the description below, and you'll also find a link to it in the headlines on my website at the moment. I do urge everybody in Australia to get involved in this because it's a very important issue. It's one that affects everybody, and it is one that you can do something about. But if you do not do something about it, no one's going to do it for you. So this is the thing that you can stand up to, folks. And if you're not prepared to stand up for this, well, then I think there's probably little hope for your future and your family anyway, because if you're not prepared to take at least this amount of action, then really, what's the point of complaining? And speaking of the InPower movement, I think I will also be having Cal Washington back on the show sometime in the near future to discuss where the InPower movement's going, what success it's been having, and what action people can get involved with on the ground, because I think there has been some pretty successful operations mounted. So I'd like to get Cal back on the show soon and bring that information to you as well. So keep an eye out for that one. But ultimately, with all of these movements and all of these actions and all the information I bring you and all the things that people put in place and suggest that you do and things for you to get involved with, ultimately it all comes down to the people. It all comes down to you, the listeners of the show, the people who are awake, the people who know what's going on. It all comes down to people who are aware of things being empowered in themselves, because that's the only solution to our dilemma. There is no other way out. That's why no one can bring you a game plan for a better system for us all to move into. Now, the whole problem with this situation that we're in, the whole human dilemma, ultimately stems from a loss of self, of the individual. I mean, even this usurious-based monetary system, which is designed to put people in scarcity and discard humanity in the name of the economic model, I mean, people are aware of it, but why do they put up with it? Why would anyone put up with this system? The only reason is because of people's need to believe that someone else has authority over them and that they need to do what they're told in the face of their own moral compass. And even when you look at the InPower movement, you look at the success that they've been having with this method, and some people who've looked at it and said, oh, it's a little bit too religious for me. Some of the wording is a little bit too religious because it talks about God and the Bible and all sorts of stuff like that. But even in doing that, folks, you've got to understand that is the basis of the legal system that enslaves you. It's all based in canon law. So whether you believe in that stuff or not, if you use it within the context of the law, it's actually very empowering to use it. Because by applying the entirety of the biblical references to the law is invalid in itself. That's why the action that the InPower movement carries out, the way they refer to it, is as divine action, because it is all based in that ecclesiastic system. But just knowing that, and even if you're not a religious person, knowing that even under the system that they use, you are the most divine thing in creation under that system. Under their own legal system, folks, you are a direct creation of the God that created everything. And the legal system and the government and all that stuff comes way, way below any natural living man or woman in the social and legal food chain. Just knowing that is hugely empowering, and standing in that is hugely empowering as well, most especially if the entire community figures it out and the entire community stands in that. And if that happens, if that was ever to happen, then the government would simply cease to exist by default, because the government is only a fiction anyway. You know, it's just a meme, it's just an idea. And this is something that I've been attempting to share with people right since the beginning. Incidentally, it is the genuine anniversary of the show this week. It's actually the 6th of October that this show is going to air. And it was the 3rd of October 2008 that I was first interviewed on the radio. So I've actually passed the 10-year mark now. And I would like to thank everybody for sticking around that long, all the listeners that have been with me since the beginning, because I know it is actually quite a great many of you. It's been an interesting journey, ladies and gentlemen, it really has. Haven't seen the change that I hoped to see so far, but I still think that we have made a difference with this whole movement. I think that it has been a success to some degree. At least there are a great number of people that are awake now and are not feeling quite so disempowered as what they may have been. Hopefully the show has done a little bit of that and brought some empowerment to people, but hopefully people see what the real solution is, because as I've said, it's the people. It can't come from any other direction, because this whole concept that enslaves us is just a concept. It's just an idea. Now, we just think the world needs to be this way because that's the way we're trained to think. And if people could just develop the support for the people around them, then I'm sure people would feel that it was okay to think outside of the box. Yeah, that's one of our problems, is that we judge anybody who thinks outside of the box as being a threat to us, which is, again, the result of programming, the result of the education system, the result of the media, and everything that's been done to keep us contained and squashed into this mentality that we're in. But hopefully the shows have alleviated that problem a little bit, although it has been subject to a lot of censorship. My channel really has struggled over the last 10 years, I must say. It's taken me 10 years to get to 100,000 subscribers simply due to my subscribers being deleted so much. And it's still happening, folks. They keep deleting my subscribers. Someone posted the other day they couldn't subscribe from the video clip. They had to go to my channel and they had to keep hitting the subscribe button for about 5 minutes before it actually took. And so if you are subscribed to my channel, folks, I do suggest that you check your subscription to make sure that it holds. And also check the votes on the video as well, because you'll find that if you don't put an upvote on the video, very likely YouTube will give a downvote on your behalf. I've found this happens to a lot of people as well, so it's very good to check your subscription. Don't forget to click the little bell so you get notified when I do upload a show, because it won't tell you otherwise. And just check that you do put in an upvote, because as I said, if you don't, it will likely place a downvote for you. And it doesn't just do it to my channel, it does it to a lot of channels. So this is just the way the algorithms work on YouTube. I'm incidentally moving over to Real Video. Well, at least I'm uploading to Real Video as well. I haven't uploaded any there yet, but I intend to upload this radio show there. So as this goes to YouTube, it should be live on Real Video as well, at least at the same time, or if not very soon after. And I'll be continuing to upload to Real Video every week from this point forward. I've opened a channel on Real Video called The Crow House, so you can go and check that. And when my shows do get censored on YouTube, as was the case with last week's show, you'll find that it's also available on BitChute, because everything I upload to YouTube is automatically posted to BitChute by default. So if a show does get uploaded to YouTube and you're not able to comment on it and you'd like to leave a comment, you can just go and join up to BitChute, open a BitChute account, and find the channel I've opened there, which is again called The Crow House, same as my YouTube channel. And if you go to that channel, there you will find the same video clip on BitChute and you'll be able to comment there. But the thing is, folks, just getting back to the topic, the thing is that with all of this information, looking for a way out is half of the problem that people face, is the fact that they're continually looking for a way out. They're not seeing what the real solution is. They're not seeing that the solution is them. You know, it can only come with individual awareness, because the entire problem is a loss of self, a respect for authority that is non-existent, and the fact that people are kept in this constant state of fear, that fear being just fear of their surroundings, fear of the future, fear of not having enough money to put food on the table, fear of not being able to gather what they need, the credits they need in order to pay to be alive. And that's going to get worse and worse with this smart system that's rolling out, because it won't just be a fear of not being able to pay to be alive, it'll be a fear of not thinking the way you should think and thinking outside the box. And that will lead you to a point where you're barred from activities and barred from access to certain services, barred from the basic essentials of life, simply because you are choosing to think like an individual. So the more and more the system becomes smart, and more the system becomes digital, the more we lose aspects of ourself. And it is this loss of self which is the whole problem. It's the entirety of the problem. You know, and when you see that this is all a result of this system, the fact that everyone is kept in this fear and they have to run on the treadmill so they never really have time to think about their surroundings, that's where it all comes from, folks. You can see what this usurious monetary system has done and exactly what it has been designed to do and how effective it is. Now, when you really step back and look at it and you consider the fact that, like I said earlier, homeless people are being discarded, homelessness has been made illegal in some countries. This is absolutely insidious, folks. It shows just how evil this system is and exactly what the system is designed to do, which is to discard humanity. And you think about it, the ones at the top who control the money system, not only do they not pay interest on any money that they borrow, they actually don't even really need to borrow it because they have an unlimited supply of money because they are the ones who create the money and they are the ones who run the system. And when you really look at this and you see how it works, you begin to see how much of a joke governments really are. They're not doing anything to benefit society. They're not controlling anything. They're just a puppet show. All they're controlling is the people via the legislation that they write, and that only happens because people believe that these people have the authority that they present themselves to have. We never really step back and look at it and see how we're being farmed and just how disgraceful and disgusting and anti-life and anti-human this system is. You know, this whole monetary system shouldn't be in place. It has no right to be there. It's the cause of all of the problems and all of our woes, the cause of all the hardship, all the wars. It's what creates scarcity, what creates competition. It's everything that has brought the world to the state that it's in, and it needs to be addressed and discarded. And any politician who supports it is not supporting their country. They're not supporting their people. Any politician who sits there and rants and raves about the economy and how important it is either an idiot and a programmed fool, or he is a slave master who knows exactly what he's doing, who is simply presenting the lie to the people and perpetuating the lie to the people and keeping the people in check and keeping them contained and keeping them controlled by perpetuating the belief that the economic system is real, that it is important, that it actually means something, and that people must tighten their belts and go without, and we must be subject to austerity and hardship and all sorts of stuff in order to balance the books, when the books are just a fiction. It is such a joke, ladies and gentlemen, and it is such a cause of human woe, and it's time we put ourselves away from it and stop supporting this system and start supporting each other. And that's why I keep coming back to that, because, again, that is the only way out of this system. No one's going to come along with a better system and lead you into it, because while we believe money is real and while we believe we need to pay to be alive, nothing is going to change. Doesn't matter what sort of society comes along. It doesn't matter how honest you think your government is. If they're still using this type of monetary system, then they're a bunch of criminals. And that's the end of the list that you've really got to compare them to, folks. If they support this monetary system, they're either an uneducated fool or an out-and-out criminal. And there's really no other option that you have to choose from. There's only those two choices. All these politicians ranting and raving about the national debt. What is the national debt, folks? Who do we owe the national debt to? We owe it to a private bank. Can anyone see something wrong with that? We're slaving away because we have to pay off the national debt, and that's what it is. It's just a debt to the Federal Reserve Bank. It's just a loan that someone took out from a private enterprise. Unless it's America owing all of that money to China, of course, but even that, I mean, who contrived that? I mean, any country that owes any money to a bank or any other country, they just mint a coin in the value of that debt and give it to the foreign government or give it to the bank and say, well, there you go, now the debt is paid. We can do that because we're the government. So we owe you $1 billion. Well, here's a $1 billion coin. Now the debt is paid. Have a nice day. We're going to go back to a government-issued monetary system that is not based in usury, is not run by private individuals, and we're going to get back to our natural state of abundance by kicking the central banks out of all of our countries. Do that, and you'll see a huge difference to the state of the world very, very quickly. That's about the only hope for this system at all, folks. If you want to keep this system and you want to find a way of improving it, well, the first two steps would be to outlaw central banking and to outlaw lobbying. Because what is lobbying? Lobbying is essentially bribing politicians to do what you want them to do. I mean, you can't go and bribe anybody in society. If I was to come and offer you financial favors to perform certain actions for me, which was going to affect the community and be highly beneficial to me but affect the rest of the community in an adverse manner, I wouldn't be able to do that. I would get arrested for bribery for doing that. Yet if you're a politician, I can do that, and I simply call it lobbying, and it's all very good and all very kosher, and I'm seen as a wonderfully responsible person who is supporting my company and offering generous campaign contributions to the honest political party that I'm supporting because they're just such good guys. Isn't that fantastic how they can do that with bribery when they apply to the political world? Just call it lobbying, just change the name and it becomes something else, the way they've done with Al-Qaeda, who are now moderate rebels fighting for freedom in Syria when just 10 years ago they were internationally condemned terrorists allegedly blowing up buildings in the United States. Wonderful how that works. As I keep saying, folks, all the world is a stage, and just looking at these things, it should become apparent to everybody that the solution is you. You know, the solution to all of this, the solution to the transgenderization of our children, the vaccination problems, the wars, the misinformation, the smart grid, the IoT, the solution to everything that's coming down lies with the people. It lies with people simply waking up to who and what they are. If they do that, then the whole facade falls down. And that's the point where we will find freedom, folks. But it's got to come from within the hearts of the individual. It can't come from anywhere else, because without having that understanding of who and what you are, nothing will work to begin with. And once you do have that, then the entire facade breaks down and you simply don't need anything else. That's just the way it works. But we're getting very close to the end of the show here, ladies and gentlemen. As I have been mentioning to you quite a bit lately, I'll be speaking at Anacapulco in February. I'm going to be doing some workshops there as well, possibly a Cambo workshop, definitely a Jape ceremony, a few other things I'll be doing there. There'll be more than one little talk that I'm doing anyway, so it's going to be a worthwhile event to come along to. There's going to be about 3,000 people there, folks. They've commandeered the entire Princess Palace Resort in Acapulco, so we're going to have 3,000 anarchists at this event, and it's going to be a pretty worthwhile event to come along to, so do get involved in that if you're able to. I'll be there for a whole week, and I'll be easy to find in the crowd, folks. I'll only be giving a couple of talks and a little workshop, so I'll be easy to find. I'll be hanging around for the entire week. There'll be a lot of people hanging around. It's very good to mingle with people, very easy to mingle with people. So if you do see me there and you want to come and say hello, do not hesitate to do so. And thank you, as always, to the many supporters of the website. Thank you to all those people who contribute to the Patreon account. None of this could happen without the contributions to Patreon. Any extra money that I get from the Patreon account, I always put towards humanitarian operations anyway, folks, if I've ever got any to spare. I did send a lot of blankets to the Philippines last year, and I do intend to be building some water towers in Peru next year. There's always relief efforts everywhere that need funding, folks, and it's always good to help these people out when I can as well. So that's what I tend to do if I ever get any spare cash on hand. But, folks, we have pretty well reached the end of the show here, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now. It's been a pleasure coming and talking to you again today, and thank you for the support that you've shown me for so long over the years. Thank you for listening to the show so regularly and putting up with my unstructured presentations and random thought flows that I give you, because I really don't have anything planned when I come on to do these shows. I sort of just start talking and see what comes out. I'd like to apologize also for the haphazard state of some of the videos that I've been uploading to YouTube. There hasn't really been a lot of pictorial relevance in what I've been putting there. I've been kind of throwing these videos together because I've just got so much on my plate at the moment. I really would like to get some work done on the films, but again, I've just got so many humanitarian projects on the burner as well, so it really is taking up a lot of time. And so I really haven't had time to be able to put together cognitive and meaningful videos for you for the YouTube presentations of these radio shows. But again, folks, it is essentially a radio show. The YouTube clips are incidental. I just kind of put the clips on YouTube in order to share the information with a wider audience. But having said that, I will attempt to put a little bit more effort back into the video clips sometime in the near future. The problem is my guy that I sometimes get to edit my video clips is overseas at the moment, enjoying his life. And I know it's incredibly irresponsible of him to be out there enjoying himself and acting like a normal human being when I need him to be slaving over video clips for me for no pay and little thanks. But that's just the way it goes. I guess people are just irresponsible sometimes. and I'll just have to deal with it. But thank you very much for joining me on the air today, folks. It's always a pleasure to have your company. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.